Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes,
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 3rd, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. My voice and chest has already headed for the exits, lounging on a, well, not on a beach, I don't know, it just went home already, and it's taking a nap. I'm still here, and joining me today, via the telephone, Cliff Schechter, and also joining me today, to suggest a movie for me to watch, a film, for me to watch over the weekend. It is Matthew Film Guy, who, upon seeing that last week Isabel Gillies was in studio, demanded equal time and equal presence. So he, too, will be in studio today. Also on the program, guess what? Fundamental is not worried about climate change. Guess why? Because it's in God's hands. Sandra Day O'Connor. Whoops. Dropped the ball. May have dropped the ball on that whole Bush v. Gore thing. What are you going to do? I guess maybe I should head down to the Bush Museum and learn how to make a decision. Also, state of play on immigration. And just this horrible story of a five-year-old accidentally shooting his two-year-old sister. And the sort of, I guess, the digging people have done in this area to find out just what's involved in marketing guns, not to kids, folks, but to parents of kids to buy for their kids. Yes. And all you little helicopter moms out there and helicopter dads are like, I'm not buying my kids a fake gun. Well, then you should just step out and get them one of them pink cricket rifles. Get them a real gun. Sequester continues on with the jobs report as well. We will get to all that and more. But first, I want to start today with an email from a listener. Sam, after listening, and because, well, you'll know why it's apropos. And folks, well, wait a second. Let me just try and keep it together here for a minute. After listening to you for years since AAA, I'm Air America, and for the past year or so on podcasts, I'm close to paying the $120 a year for your show. 33 cents a day. That's a hell of a lot of cash, far more than I give to Pacifica each year, where I get to hear Reggae Revolution each Sunday. I don't know how long Reggae Revolution is, but I would imagine on a per hour basis, I would examine it in that way. Nevertheless, I have just two questions that will help me decide, or maybe three. One, can you promise not to become a kiss-ass like Marin and stick your head up the arse of every celebrity who comes on your show in the hopes of landing 10 minutes on a feature film. Or, in Mark's case, a pilot on a channel barely above public access. Now, let me say this, folks. I don't know that Mark does that. I know that I would not do any arse-kissing that did not lead to at least a 15-minute part in a film. I want to make that explicitly clear. And really, for me, it has more to do, less to do with whether or not I get a pilot or whether or not I'm seen on camera. And it really has more to do with just cold hard cash. So, in other words, I would be more apt to take a gig that was just sort of pay to play and got quashed for big money than I would, like, hey, you know, you're going to get exposure. I'm not terribly interested in that. I'm interested in the cash. All right, it's just because I want to be honest about this. He writes, I used to be a faithful W2EF listener, but found an inverse correlation between the difficult questions Mark will ask versus the success of the person he's interviewing. Now, he goes on to talk about how he approached Ben Stiller versus Gallagher. And I didn't listen to the Ben Stiller one. I couldn't. So, I don't know. That's something you're going to have to take up with Maron. I want to remind you, however, Maron's show is debuting tonight on IFC. And I encourage you all to watch it because I am happy for his success. And I want him to be as successful as possible. I don't want it to last very long, but I do want him to reach a pinnacle because the ride down will be really fun to watch. I'm not going to get back into it. Folks, come on. Grow up, all right? And make a joke. Listener goes on to say, my iPhone faithfully downloads the podcast each day. Do I have to do some jacking around with my phone and enter passwords to get extended show to play each day? Please tell me this is an automated process once set up. Yes. It's an automated process that is set up once. You shouldn't have to mess around with it. And our app, I don't know why it's taking so long. I got to call the guy again today, but the app is coming very shortly. So at the very least, that will take care of it. If you want to wait for the app, wait for the app. Is PayPal the only way to do a monthly contribution? I hate PayPal. PayPal comes one more bill I have to manage. Can I cut you an automated check via my bank or use a credit card transaction? Yeah, you can use a credit card through PayPal. I don't like PayPal either. We're looking into Dwolla. But if you want to send an automated check, yeah, you can do that. Send me an email and we'll work that out. You could tell me to F off on item one, but I'm curious on items two and three. Continued luck with the show. The email was longer than that. I edited it for time. Folks, I also want to tell you I appreciate all the emails we got regarding the interview we did yesterday with John Mullins. We have cut that into a YouTube, both a shorter one and a longer one. We'll post both on our blog at majority.fm. I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, but even more so, take that interview and post it on your Facebook page. Tweet it out. People really enjoyed it. This, of course, for those of you who don't listen on Thursdays for whatever reason, this was the guy who we found some footage of him basically standing up to some teabagging nut job at a town hall with his congressman, Mike Rogers, in Alabama, in Auburn, Alabama. And not only did he basically say to the teabagger, you're insane, but then he went on to tell Mike Rogers about how austerity and the sequester is impacting his business, and then to give them an economics lesson. And so we tracked him down, and he came on the show. We'll also put a link to his Facebook page of his business. We've already done that. A lot of people said we want to thank him. His what he said was so inspirational and moving. And he also had some pretty good points about taxation, the way it affects employment, which I haven't seen this argument made, quite frankly, that much. And I haven't seen any data on it, but it does make some sense. If you're a corporation and you know that you can spend your money on hiring someone, you know that you're dealing with a 35% tax rate. So that you know that any profits you're going to get are going to get taxed at 35%. And you can spend that dollar either in taking profits or in adding to your productivity at a 70 cents a dollar expense because you're saving that 35 cents from taxes. You can increase your productivity and increase the volume of dollars you generate. And so at the end of the day, even though you're still dealing with a 35% tax rate, you will have more profits if you increase your productivity. Now, of course, all of this is presumed that there is demand that will drive that revenue and make it, encourage you to hire in the first place. But at a time of increased demand, it makes sense for you to hire if that dollar can increase your productivity and bring in more dollars than that first dollar that you would be subjected to taxes to. I hope I'm articulating what he said there, but it makes sense. But all that's predicated on demand, and as government cuts, you see demand go down at a time of a recession or post-recession. Excuse me. Hold on, I got to take a break. Folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For instance, why not go and pick up Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield, Jeremy Scahill's newest book, and get it for free. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report and get a free downloadable audiobook now. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Pick up Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield, Scahill's new book. You'll love it. audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Do it now.
Here that rhymes with anything. We are back. Folks, sorry about that. I am still fighting a new cold. Why shouldn't I be? And but fortunately, it is Casual Friday. On the phone is the more than capable talker, Cliff Schechter. And before we get to him, though, let's play the Cliff Schechter theme song. Let's play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful and lovely Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff.
Wonderful and lovely. I like it. That's sort of a nice way of saying the opposite of more than capable talker, which kind of a euphemism for that guy has a big effing mouth. Which
yes,
I dig
he has
also,
a huge mouth, but that's a very strong attribute on radio.
That's a good point. Radio is a place where it comes in handy. There are many places I've been in my life before, like, let's say, school didn't come in so much handy there.
Right. Well, no, I mean, that is... this is the one place I am in my element, sitting here for this 90 minutes a day. So we share that sort of double-edged sword, as it were.
My whole life is a double-edged sword, Sam.
All right. Now, listen, we had planned to talk about immigration. I want to talk about the immigration situation. But there's a couple of things that we got to talk about that are more that you and I talk about quite a bit. You are heavily involved in this, and we will move past this. But we have to talk about this this story of, you know, first off, we have talked in the past, and it has continued on that dynamic. The implications for senators who voted against the gun safety measures, it has become more pronounced as time has gone on, and it's not going away.
It's actually rather amazing, and I will say that as somebody who has worked on this issue for a long time, and I thought I was always an optimist that people were going to understand the importance of this issue. People were going to understand that this isn't a social issue as much as, like, so many other things, an economic issue of people making money off of the misery of others. The people were going to understand that the NRA couldn't care less about whatever they think your Second Amendment rights are, but really are literally about protecting the most paranoid militia elements of our society and convincing them to continually buy ever more heavy and dangerous weaponry to enrich the people they really care about, the gun manufacturers. You know, I thought people would realize that it's the most vulnerable among us that have become victims most often, whether it's children, whether it's people in poorer communities, you know, and all this stuff, you know, these things have been funny. But I have to admit, even I, you know, with my optimism that people would get this, that this needs to be a core issue, a core value of what we stand for, that we get to this point. We're literally in Louisiana, which has the highest gun ownership rate per capita in the country, and North Carolina, which obviously is certainly a lean red state, even if Obama won it the first time around and barely lost the second time around. You know, Kay Hagan and Mary Landrieu have seen big bumps in their poll numbers because they supported this thing. Meanwhile, Dean Heller, Mark Begich, Kelly Ayotte, all these people have just seen their numbers plummet. Rob Portman here in Ohio, because, again, his son is gay, but his son hasn't been shot at, so he can evolve on the first issue but not the second, because it does have to actually happen to Rob Portman for him to understand it. And, I mean, that, you know, so it's amazing. Yeah, you're seeing these numbers out there, and they're real. And it seems to me like certain other issues that we talk about that are the core of defining whether you are indeed a Democrat, for example, I don't know, being for Social Security, being pro-choice, being in favor of gay marriage now is one of those issues. And I think being, at the very least, being in favor of background checks has gotten up there to be one of those issues.
Yeah, and part of it is because, I mean, I think part of that is because for the right, this has become another identity politics situation. And I want to
talk
this whole gun thing. Now, I want to play a clip. I want to play a little game here. Now, you may know, you may recognize this, so I want you to be quiet, Cliff. I want you to give the opportunity for people listening at home to take a guess on where we found this clip and who this clip might be. I want to play, this is B. I want to play clip 1B, okay? And I want people to listen to this guy and just picture in your mind who they think this guy is. Whether it's just some random guy we found, whatever it is. Let's play this clip.
We're all in this together. You know, the history of the New York Rifle and Pistol Association, the NRA, from the inception has been very, very close. The NRA was started 1871 right here in New York State. It was started by some Yankee generals who didn't like the way my Southern boys had the ability to shoot in what we call the War of Northern Aggression. Now, y'all might call it the Civil War, but we call it the War of Northern Aggression down south. But that was the very reason that they started the National Rifle Association, was to teach and train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm. And I am one who still feel very strongly that that is one of our most greatest charges that we can have today, is to train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm so when they have to fight for their country, they're ready to do it. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they're ready to do it. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they have the wherewithal and the weapons to do it.
Okay, now, a couple of things here about this. One is, what I loved is this is a talk that's taking place in New York, and the guy says, we called it the War of Northern Aggression, and the audience sort of laughs, and then he says, no, that's what we call it. And then everybody sort of goes, what? And then this guy goes on to say, the NRA was set up to train civilians how to handle military weapons in the event that they have to fight for their country or fight tyranny. In other words, whether they have to fight their country or fight against their country, we're teaching them to use military-grade weapons. I want people to think about just how insane that conversation sounded. Again, I challenge you, think about who you think that guy is. Let's play the next clip, still thinking about who is this guy?
Eric Holder. What else do I need to say about Eric Holder other than the fact that, by God, obviously we ain't smart enough for him to brainwash us, because he says that's what they need to do. We just need to brainwash these people and get that gun thinking out of their mind. That's what the man said. Rabidly anti-gun, rabidly un-American. Involved in trying to kill the Second Amendment at the United Nations, Eric Holder. And our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, right there, right in the middle of it. And what do they want to do? They, right in the United Nations today, they have an initiative that would make it illegal for individuals all over the world to own firearms. And that's what they're passing, and that's what this administration is supporting. They don't trust us with guns. We're not smart enough. We're not good enough to have guns.
There you have it. Okay, now, Cliff, do you know who this guy is who was speaking last June in New York State?
It is the ever sexy, pot-bellied, and very well edumacated Jim Porter, a lawyer in Birmingham, Alabama, who is done everything for the NRA short of swabbing the toilets during his time there, and is about to become the new president of the NRA, because they thought having David Keene as their president, the guy whose son went around in a little shooting spree in Washington, D.C. from when he had road rage shooting at people and is spending time in jail for doing that, but his daddy didn't want him to have there to be background checks for people like his own son. They didn't think David Keene apparently was crazy enough. So they got had to go get War of Northern Aggression guy, Jim Porter, whose dad, by the way, was also a former president of the NRA and presided over the infamous meeting in 1977 known as the Cincinnati Revolt. I say with great irony as I sit here in Cincinnati, because this is where the national meeting was, where they overthrew the people that stood for what the NRA used to stand for, which he was talking about, although somewhat incorrectly. Teaching people how to shoot straight, sport shooting, hunting, and the rest, and they was taken over by a radical bunch of lunatics who have ruled it ever since. And this guy's dad was part
this
of that.
Guy,
the great Jim Porter.
This guy is the new president of the NRA. I mean, this isn't just some dude that we recorded on a street corner talking, you know, like a moron. This is a guy who is like. Integral in terms of the policy apparatus in this country regarding guns. This nut job who claims that the NRA was set up to provide paramilitary training for American citizens in the event that they have to go to war, because apparently the military training is not enough, or in an event that they have to attack their own government.
Yeah, let's be clear, okay?
This is insane.
Because sometimes we're not, you know, I think I'm always pretty clear on this, but I don't know that everybody is. What he's doing, that's treason, by the way. And that is not the interpretation the NRA has, which includes this nutbag and what Lane LaPierre throws out there. No, they have no understanding of history. They have no understanding of the Constitutional Convention, of the original Articles of the Confederation that were way too weak, so we had a stronger Constitution that gave certain powers to the federal government. And the Second Amendment was there very simply because they looked at the Shays Rebellion, other rebellions like that. They looked at attacks from, at the time, Native Americans and from the British. It was a way without a standing army to protect our country from attacks without and within. It was nothing to do with going after our own government. It was how to protect our own government and how to protect our country. This is some made-up fantasy by a guy in an organization that still haven't gotten over the Civil War. And believe me, you hear what he's saying and you think that's unique. Listen to Ted Nugent about how the South should have won the Civil War in a column he wrote in the Washington Times. Look at the guy who started the current incarnation of the NRA, whose name was Harlan Carter, who when his mom told him there were some Hispanic kids in his area of Laredo, Texas, hanging out outside the house, bothering her, he went and found one of them and tried to kidnap him back to the house, and the kid said no, he shot him and killed him, was convicted of murder and got off on a technicality, then of course went to work for the Immigration and Naturalization Service, a natural place for this guy to work, and eventually we became the first guy after the NRA overthrew the old guard to run it, a guy that maybe committed one of the first acts of stand your ground. You know, and of course had that Southern mentality. This is what I try to explain to people so much. This is not the mentality of someone who's a hunter in Maine or Wisconsin or somewhere. This is a Confederate, anti-government, racist, anti-U.S. Read a couple of Michael Lind's books.
I was going to say, like, what is the? How would this be different? How would Jim Porter sound different than basically going down to some type of KKK rally? I mean, we didn't have the N-word. And we probably didn't have a couple of F bombs. But I mean, this notion of like the War of Northern Aggression. No, I know you thought that was a joke. I'm being serious. And then, of course, we got the UN over here. I mean, this guy, it's just shocking. Now,
and it shouldn't need to be said, but just so anybody listening understands, the UN treaty was about international arms trading. It had nothing to do with civilian ownership of firearms.
Yeah,
it was about selling guns into hostile places where mass groups of people are being murdered.
Nice
and like Fast and Furious, which I put quotes around, and other such things, it was another way, because the NRA literally sits there trolling around like the scumbags they are for things they can blow up and take out of context to scare their right wing, again, Southern-based, you know, Confederate mentality, rural constituency into being scared and wanting to fight back against their own government and against minorities and against
I knew you would say that. I knew you would say that, Cliff Schechter.
What'd you say?
I knew you would say that, Cliff Schechter. Of course, you are one of the Illuminati who would come here to tell us about how wonderful the UN is. Now,
Where can I join the Illuminati? I'm actually a combo. I'm part Illuminati, part Bilderberger, part Mason.
Right.
And part
Well, we call you what we do. We know that you're one of the Rothschilds.
I get together with their secret meetings with the Rothschilds in Switzerland every year, where we plan out the entire schedule for what's going on in the year.
Okay, now I want you to
now listen. What kind of clothes Kim Kardashian's throwing on that day? We got it all, man. We run the thing.
The reason why, you know, I wanted to talk about this gun stuff today too is this story of a 5-year-old in Kentucky. Now, apparently, this is just sort of the way it is in Kentucky, according to the AP. This is what we're led to believe, that all the 5-year-olds, all the kindergartners, all the 4-year-olds, they get their first gun when they're 4, because it's part of their tradition,
right,
to learn to hunt when they're 4. Now, I have a 7.5-year-old, and I don't know at what point in her development that we gave her a sharp knife to eat at the dinner table, okay, where presumably we have some. But, you know, these kids, they don't necessarily know.
Yeah, when I saw a picture of her in Gun World magazine, I was a little bit shocked, Sam, you let her do that spread.
Well, I mean, you know, like my daughter was still until, you know, and now she's starting to go. We went to a funeral, but she didn't even understand the concept of death, okay? Like she would say, like, you're killing me. I'm dying. Like, they don't understand certain concepts at age 6, as far as I know.
Kid
I don't
says
think
stuff
my,
like that. My
6-year-old
says stuff like that all the time. Okay. So you definitely want to give someone like that a gun.
So the story is, this is a horrible story. On Tuesday, this 5-year-old boy, playing with a rifle he was given last year, his mother stepped out onto the front porch while cleaning the kitchen.
Because what could be wrong? What could go wrong there?
She heard the gun go off. The boy had killed his 2-year-old sister, Caroline, with a single shot to the chest. The rifle was kept in a corner of the mobile home, and the family didn't realize a bullet had been left in it. You can only put one bullet in these cricket rifles. So it was still loaded. They had just forgotten about it. They leave the gun in the corner because this is just a tradition.
Right.
In apparently in Kentucky. Now, I want to say a couple of things about this. One is, I've seen the news reports on this, and everyone makes a very conscious decision to say, I'm not going to discuss or indict the parents for this. This is a tragedy. We're going to talk about the gun sellers.
No, I'm indicting the parents.
And I'm going to say that if this mother had been African-American and had left her son in a car while she went into the grocery store with the window rolled down and that boy died of heat stroke, we would hear about how the black community does not take care of their children. This would go on. This would be on for hour after hour after hour. These parents should be in jail right now. That 5-year-old kid's, never mind the 2-year-old is dead. That 5-year-old kid's life is ruined.
This is putting a cigarette in your kid's mouth, feeding your kids booze, like via funnel. This is the thing, and I don't mean to cut you off, but this is what I go off on and I just sort of lose it about and just drives me crazy all the time. Guns are the only product not regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, okay? Guns, we basically, you know, 2 kids die a year, you know, with some sort of a car seat, and we pull that car seat and have a new
right.
one. Guns have been this total exception to what rules virtually every other area of our society, where we're just supposed to, as you just said with these parents, look the other way and whistle when it happens, because it just happens. It's just a part of our culture. And that is why I always say that the legal, what we do legally, background checks, getting rid of assault weapons, the rest is so important. But really what is just as important, and no one's doing this right now, maybe this is an invitation to anybody listening who feels like they could contribute to this, we need PSAs, like, out there. We need gun locks. We need PSAs. We need, I'm sorry if this is insulting your culture, but again, people don't think that way in Maine. They don't think that way. And again, I'm not indicting all Kentuckians or all Mississippians or whatever, but there is this Confederate, and I'll just call it what it is, counterculture that hates our government and think guns are an identity issue, as you pointed out, where, you know, it's just a big F you to the damn liberals and the government and the minorities and whatever, having our guns, you know, and not being safe with them and treating them like toys. They are not freaking toys.
Hey, if you are a Christian Scientist and you do not give your kid medical treatment when that kid is in an acute emergency state, you can be brought in on manslaughter.
Right.
And so the idea that this is an offense, the idea that somehow you're offending our culture of gun ownership for five-year-olds, this is just absurd. That those parents should be in jail right now.
And I mean, what, you know,
they might as well take that five-year-old kid and hand him his first dose of meth.
And for a while,
that kid's
culture,
life is
our culture, our culture counted slavery and segregation for a while, too, not allowing women to vote. We've had all sorts of things in our culture that our culture is allowed to happen. And I'm sorry, I'm not equating gun ownership with that. I am, however, equating unsafe gun ownership with that. I am equating people who treat guns like toys, leave them around kids. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've had David Waldman on this show before, Cagro X, who has, you know, after Newtown started this series Gun Fail, and he never, no pun intended, fails every week to have numerous cases of things like this. Kids shooting kids, parents shooting kids, people cleaning their guns and forgetting there's a bullet in them. I mean, we take these people that we've determined in society are too immature, stupid, whatever you say, to do a lot of other things, but they all have a right to do whatever they want with a gun, and we won't judge them for it.
I want to play a couple of clips from a show called... it's not on my sound list, but it's a show that's on.
I believe it's called the Locked and Loaded Gun
Locked
Show.
Locked and Loaded. Okay. It's called Locked and Loaded. And this is a show, I guess it's a, I don't know, promoting guns. And on this episode, they're checking out the cricket rifle for four-year-olds. Let's listen to the first clip of this.
Hi there, you are watching Lock and Load. I'm your host, Brandy Vega. If you like what you see here, please tell your friends. Also, leave a comment. Let us know what gun you'd like to see featured. Today's episode is all about youth rifles. Giving guns to kids. This is a small gun. Clark, we might get some feedback.
We might. We might get some feedback about giving a child a gun. However, under proper supervision, under the right circumstances, it's totally appropriate.
When is a good age to give a kid their first gun?
As a parent, you're going to know.
And what are the main safety rules? If you can give one or two things, what is
muzzle direction, trigger finger. Teach your child that don't let that muzzle point at or cover anything you don't want a hole in. And a little kid can understand that. And then teach them where to put their trigger finger. Keep it off of the trigger until they're ready to shoot.
What is the first gun a parent should give their kid?
Well, I mean, that's up to them. A lot of people think BB guns or pellet guns. However, you get into a complacency with them because they are dangerous. And so I chose a .22.
Okay, there's three things here I want to point out before we do the second one. One is, apparently, according to this guy, as a parent, you're going to know the age that your child should have a gun. I want people to keep that in mind when they think about what we're going to hear in the next clip in that same show. As a parent, you're going to know. Now, apparently, Stephanie Sparks, the parent of this five-year-old who shot his two-year-old daughter, sister, she didn't quite know. So we should keep that in mind. The other two things about safety, this is the two most important things for safety when you're talking about kids and guns. Apparently, it's muzzle direction and trigger finger. Not don't let the kids use the guns when you're not there. Lock them up. Not to have some other type of safety features. It's just that when they're playing around with a gun, just tell them not to point it at somebody.
Right.
And then he claims that kids are going to understand this, that if you pulled a gun and they shoot them, that it's going to put a hole in. The kids are going to understand this, according to this guy.
Of course they do. They understand.
Yeah,
all
of course
of
they
stuff.
Know. Except for the woman who is interviewing him as she explains literally 2 minutes later in this same show.
And I think you're right. I don't think we're growing up in that same type of a gun-friendly, if you will, almost a gun-taboo type culture now.
Right, and we spoke about safety, and I wanted to share a really quick story, not a very good one. If you have guns in your home, you do have to be very careful. As a child, 6 years old, my mom had a gun. She thought it was hidden. It was loaded. It was hidden under a mattress. I knew about it. We were alone one day. My sister made me mad. I found that gun. I chased her around the house with a loaded gun at 6 years old. not really knowing the consequences. And so even though we talk to the kids, we need to make sure we're safe in keeping these guns locked up if you have them in your home, because I could have easily tripped or pulled the trigger, and it could have been devastating. So that's my little don't do this one at home story.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though, and I agree, well, sisters, you know, I mean, sisters, I've seen some things that rival the Iraq War with sisters. But this is a deadly weapon. This is a dangerous weapon and a deadly weapon. That needs to be emphasized.
But it's also fun, and it's a good family bonding, and it's good to learn the fundamentals when you're young, because then you can carry that with you.
Cut it. All right. Did people understand what just happened here? This woman who was doing this thing just told a story of when she was six. She had no concept of what she was doing when she was holding this gun. She was chasing her sister around, could have easily pulled that trigger, could have accidentally pulled this trigger and killed her sister. And she's sitting here promoting this stuff. How low and despicable or stupid do you have to be? And then this dude, who is shocked that she has told this story to him, is like, well, sisters, they're like Iraq.
You know, like, because it's just those girls and that stupid stuff they do.
Are you kidding me? This is just, like, that woman, first of all, I hope she got paid millions and millions of dollars. I hope she's swimming in money. She can't breathe. There's so many dollar bills in her mouth because, God forbid, her kid ever gets killed by a gun in that situation. And she realizes, oh, I guess I didn't learn the lesson. I mean, that's just stunning to me. This is a religion to these people. This is a religion to these people.
That's right.
And they not care. Sam, and it involves human sacrifice, and they do not care.
No, they don't. And again, it's what we've talked about in this show a lot. I remember when I was doing my research on McCain for the book in 2008, and I went to Arizona, and that's where I saw some of the first traces of what would become like the Tea Party. And there are these when I started talking to these guys, and I thought I was, you know, rationally, and there are these just identity issues with them. And this was one of them. Obviously, believing global warming is a hoax is the second one, and not allowing in any of those darn brown people into the country is a third one. And this is what the NRA has done. They have, and groups like them, with what the stuff we're talking about earlier, their UN theories and their stuff about Obama and whatever, they have purposely polarized the population where most people think they're a bunch of loons, but they just need a smaller number to be with them. And they've taken these people that are really already dangerously stupid and dangerously paranoid and made them stupider and more paranoid. What they've done. And it's a marketing plan.
It's a marketing
plan.
These
shows on TV like this that are just, I mean, again, you know, this is a public health epidemic. This is no different than teen smoking. This is no different than drunk driving. And we know how to handle these things. You know, but don't you dare touch my culture. Don't, you know, respect my culture. You know, I'm sorry, but rural white male culture has pretty much been stupid about everything for the past 200 years.
Now, just to emphasize your point about this being just simply a cultural ID and this notion that they perceive themselves, you know, and their gun culture is like a religion for them. I want to listen to this clip from All In with Chris Hayes last night. Chris Hayes, who is perhaps the most respectful cable television news host, I don't know, in the history of cable news television, okay, has a guy on who has written a book called Gun Guys. Apparently he's had him on before. He's talking about this story of...
I debated that guy, by the way, on NPR, okay. The Gun Guys guy.
So Hayes has talked about this story of the five-year-old who gets killed. I mean, the two-year-old who gets killed by the five-year-old who's playing with the gun, the loaded gun. Brings this guy on. And I want you to just listen to what this guy's response is. This just gives you a sense of the level of rationality in this argument. All right, play this clip. This is number four.
I want to begin with you, Dan. You wrote this great book. You are someone who owns guns. You and I have had conversations about gun culture. And I guess I want to get your reaction to what I just said, because here's how I feel as we've had this conversation. I feel like everyone who's a liberal who doesn't own a gun is in this weird defensive crouch that they have to apologize for not being part of gun culture and tipping their head that they understand that gun culture is this important thing. And I want to say, look, guns are destructive things that do a lot of damage, and I think it's fine to come into the conversation with some real skepticism and trepidation about how they're regulated and managed.
Yeah, that's fine. I would take issue with the highly disrespectful tone you're taking. I'm with you on the merits, Chris, and my heart goes out to the Sparks family, but I got to say, I started shooting when I was five. I started shooting a .22 rifle when I was five. Teaching young children to shoot can be disciplining. It can be mind-calming. There's hand-eye there. There's family tradition. Teaching young children to shoot, I think, is a good thing. What is not a good thing is letting children have access to those guns all the time. I'm beating this drum all over the place. I'm beating this drum all over the place. Okay.
Stop. All right. So the point is here, Cliff, is that I agree with you on the merits, but I don't like your disrespectful tone. Now, this is just absurd.
This guy, can I say, because this guy's a jackass. I debated him on NPR, and you know, we got pretty heated, because you can imagine anything for NPR is heated. But he did the same thing with me, you know, and you do feel like in this defensive crouch, and I almost feel like I have to point out that I used to shoot for sport on a team every summer or whatever, which I really shouldn't have to point out that I've been around guns, because it's a public policy issue in the end, and it's a public safety issue. And his whole thing was, well, background checks, and by the way, the way he keeps using the term gun guys makes me just want to punch him in the face.
I understand,
it's so stupid.
Yeah, well, he's promoting his book.
The gun guys believe this, and the gun guys, and gun guys that, and gun guys, and, you know, and he just keeps doing that incessantly, and his whole thing was, well, background checks may be acceptable to gun guys, but assault weapons, you're just going to lose us all. You know, you have to respect our culture and move. I'm like, no, I actually don't.
This is like somebody saying, like, hey, you know what? You know, I agree with you on the merits, but I don't like the way your tone that you take when you talk about my ATVs.
Oh, the poor
victims. Oh, you know,
when
you talk about my snowmobile. Look, this is snowmobile culture, and I don't appreciate the way that you refer to snowmobiles with such derision.
Because
this is not a freaking religion. This is
them.
Just insane. This is just insane. I agree with you on the merits of this policy. I just don't like the fact the way you refer to, like, you stigmatize tobacco. What? Grow up, you two-year-old. I'll tell you something. He's lucky he was on Chris Hayes' show, because I would have jumped through that TV and I would have just broken that LED screen.
I'm going to get you the NPR footage when I went up against him, where they tried to kind of calm things down, because I just basically called him out that he's a liar, which he was. He was lying about all sorts of statistics. Oh, background checks don't help anything. He had no idea what the hell he was talking about. And you know, and then on the assault weapons and the other things, he was like, oh, well, that wouldn't make a difference either. And he had no idea statistically that we've had almost half the mass shootings that we've had in the history of this country since the assault weapons ban has expired. So, of course, he did what all these guys do and just said, well, I don't know that I believe that statistic. Well, of course you don't. It's inconvenient. I'm skewing the polls, of course, because you're a gun guy, and that means you know more, because you're obsessed with a gun like it's your penis.
I love this guy. I'll tell you what I love about the rest of us
who found a little more, let's call them constructive ways to spend our time than stroking our gun.
The thing I love about this guy is that he's found a good marketing niche, right?
I mean, he's the liberal who loves guns.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the gun guy, and you still got to respect the culture. The idea that Chris Hayes is talking disrespectfully to you, if Chris Hayes is talking disrespectfully to you, you've got a real problem.
If he's
offended you in some way, you've got a real problem.
But I got to tell you, because I'm a little bit bothered by you, I don't feel that you have enough respect for domestic abuse culture.
I know. You know, like, you talk about muscle-beating t-shirts.
How can you hate our country?
Yeah. It's just unbelievable to me. I mean.
There are people I know who are hunters. There's people that do shoot for sport. There are many countries that have found very safe ways to shoot for sport. You do this crazy thing called leaving your gun on the range when you're done. But throw that aside for a second. You know, there are people that do this. And again, that's why people are like, well, people who totally misjudged the way background checks were going to go down and why Kelly Ayotte's getting her ass kicked up in New Hampshire right now. But yet Susan Collins went along with it and Mark Kirk agreed because, you know, who are Republicans, because the truth is that there's some states that technically are in the North that have some Southern mentality to them, some Confederate mentality to them. But the truth is, in states where it really is just about hunting, it's just one part of many aspects of your life, They don't have this mentality. They want more gun safety, that you can still own a rifle in your home and go and lock it up safely and hunt and do all that stuff, and yet look at the same time as we need many more regulations. We need an assault weapons ban. We need these kinds of things, right? But that's different than this culture that this guy is talking about. And again, it's not always just in the – I don't want to say it's just in the South, but that's certainly where its base comes from. That same Confederate – because when you're talking about the identity politics, let's face it, that all goes back to still some of that pre-Civil War stuff where this gun is just part of your life, and you're not taking my damn guns away, and that gun is my protection against a tyrannical government, and you're not going to tell me how to be safe with my gun. If I want to leave it lying around, I'm going to leave it lying around. You can't tell me how to lock it up and all the rest. And that's what leads to this.
Yeah.
That's what leads. It's that level of unbelievable stupidity. Now, you know what? You and your rural culture, we've judged you when you think women are second-class citizens and don't have the right to control their own reproductive justice. We've judged you when you think gay couples shouldn't have the same rights as the rest of us. We've judged you when you think all sorts of other insane things, or we should go invading countries that didn't have weapons of mass destruction. And you know what? Weapons of mass destruction. You know what? I'm going to judge you on this, too. If you can't handle guns in safe ways, if you can't keep what I will call weapons of mass destruction, assault weapons out of people's homes that are weapons of war. If you think that that's just okay for 5-year-olds to walk around with guns and have them in rooms with their sister when nobody else is around, well, you're an idiot. And I'm going to judge your culture. I'm sorry. Your culture is stupid, and it's retrograde, and it's hurting people, and it's getting people killed. Deal with it. Sorry if that makes you a victim and you have to go crying on Chris Hayes' show, because as you pointed out, Chris Hayes is so mean and so disrespectful.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Well, Cliff, we had other stuff to talk about. It's going to have to wait. I know that you can't be with us next week. I don't know what that's about.
Well, we'll see. I this is my catharsis, Sam. I we're traveling on Friday. I'll see if there's any time
maybe,
I can join
maybe
you.
Maybe we can do a pre-tape on Thursday or something.
And I just want to do something quickly before I have to go and do a shout-out to Arliss Bunny, who I know listens to this show, because I just met her the other day, and people don't realize how famous Sam is around the country because of this show. And sometimes if you're lucky enough to go on this show, sometimes like I am,
Sam,
like she knew who I was, not because of anything else I've ever done, because really most of what I've done beyond this show is pretty much inconsequential in life. But just the fact that I'm on this show on Fridays, she knew who I was.
There you go.
So everybody understand the impact of Sam.
You can
Peter.
Take that to the bank. You will leave the bank with it because they won't deposit it in any fashion.
If you
can take it to the bank
with that and you fill a deposit slip, they'll probably kick your ass right out of the bank. But it doesn't change the fact that, you know what? Sam's doing stuff and people are hearing it. You should all know that.
All right. Well, Cliff Schechter, everybody, thank you so much for joining us, Cliff.
Thanks for having me on, buddy.
All right. What are we going to do? Applause? What do you do?
Let's get an applause going there.
Matt couldn't help himself. He was applauding.
How do you let Cliff put you over like that and not give him a round of applause?
There you go. All right, Cliff Schechter. Cliff.
Now I feel even better.
We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate
it. Take care.
Thanks, buddy. All right, folks. We're going to take a break when we come back. Walking into studio as we speak, I don't know if you can hear me outside the studio, is a Matthew Film Guy who's been waiting in the hallway. Oh, look at him. Oh.
Looking spiffy.
Wow. Somebody dressed up for this today. All right, folks, we'll be back in just a moment after this musical interlude. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, last week, as you know, we had the wonderful and talented Isabel Gillies in studio to give us a movie recommendation. And then I received an email from our next guest complaining that he was not invited into the studio. And so we invited him in.
Helped you out there, didn't I?
You helped me out there? What do you mean?
You know, I made it easier for you to invite me in, but make it look like I invited myself in. And that way you can explain my presence here.
I'm not really following.
No, okay.
You didn't invite yourself in, but you did complain that you weren't invited.
No, I didn't complain. Read the email.
Gave me a guilt trip.
Read the email.
You said something like, "Oh, I'd love to come in, Sam."
Yeah, I would. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well,
I love
of course,
you guys.
Happy to have you.
It's Matthew Thank Film you. Guy, so we need to play Matthew Film Guys.
Exactly. Yes, that's what I was waiting for.
Oh, all right.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream.
I can't believe you're actually singing along to it.
I'm lip syncing.
Yeah, you know the words. You got to talk into
it's not done. It's not done. Vroom guy. Yeah, that's great. Another shout out to the great Jason Pace of the Talls for putting that together.
Yes. All right.
Love you, Jason.
You got to continue to talk into the microphone.
Into the mic? Yeah.
Yeah.
You can move it a little bit closer.
Yeah, I'm going to. I want to look
at
you, Sam.
Let's not get too carried away.
No. Just a little.
So, Matthew is here, everybody. The last film that Matthew recommended, I don't know, because you've been on with these guys a couple of times now.
Yeah. Did you watch any Torchwood?
I have not watched Torchwood.
Okay.
Yet.
Torchwood?
No, but I plan to. I just didn't want to. I wanted to watch it sequentially with.
Please, yeah.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, smart man.
Okay. I don't remember the last film you recommended to me.
I know. But did you watch Drive?
No.
Okay. You should watch Drive.
Okay. Drive.
I can't remember. Is that the last one that I recommended to you? Wait, hold on.
I think so. You have a list?
Yeah.
You keep a list in your phone there?
Yeah. Jeez, I prepare for this.
Ever the professional.
I take this seriously.
Well, no. I take it seriously, too.
No, I'm not talking about you.
Not that seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, so seriously that I would write it down.
Right. Well, that's the difference between you and me, I guess.
All right. Well, let's not get – obviously, you don't – you know.
I have a lot of things written down here. But actually, I didn't write down the last few. But I think Drive was one of the last great ones that I thought you'd really enjoy.
Drive.
And
okay.
have, like, the time to put into it. It's not like a quiet – you know, it's sort of an arty but action film. So
it's a bit slow.
I guess for an action film.
It was a really
film.
Good movie.
You saw it.
Wait, what was Drive about again? What was it?
It's with Ryan Gosling, and he's – he's a guy who's partaking in some like not so legal thing.
He's like a Hollywood stunt driver that gets sort of conscripted into a gang. Albert Brooks is a bad guy.
Didn't see it. Yeah. I will watch it.
You love Albert Brooks.
I do love Albert Brooks. Yeah. I will watch it.
Christina Hendricks is in it.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know who she is.
Well, redhead.
Yeah, she's very.
She's a redhead. Okay, great.
She's a very attractive lady from Mad Men.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know who she is. All right, so. So Drive, so let's pretend for a moment I watched Drive. It was good. All right, now let's hear what you have for us. I want to, before we get into this, because people I don't think realize this, but I don't know if there was an individual who was more a part of the nascent WTF, besides, of course, Brendan, who was his producer at the time, then you. You were on, like, the first five WTFs, weren't you, or something like
that? I was on, like, four of the first eight or something like that, before he really had the format figured out.
Right, and then he just jettisoned you.
Well, he moved to L.A., so I choose not to see it as he jettisoned me, as much as the logistics made it not as feasible, and it took on a life of its own, you know, an hour with one person.
Matt chose not to go to L.A.
Well, that is actually true. I'm not moving to L.A. to follow Marc Maron, as much as I love the guy.
So now, do you feel in some way vindicated? Let's hear what happened.
Vindicated?
I don't know.
In what sense? No, I look, I wish the guy all the best. I'm looking forward to his show that's coming on tonight. And
have you seen any of it?
Yeah, I watched the sneak preview episode, and it was promising.
That was episode number two, right?
Yeah. I thought it had some good stuff. It wasn't, like, as funny as I'd hoped, but it was, like, really touching by the end when he – did you watch it?
I thought –
You watched it.
I did watch it. Okay. I thought when he went in the end to see that guy, I was left, like, wanting a little bit some comedy in that moment.
Yeah. Well, that's – I know you have –
You know what I wanted? I wanted the old man to look up at him and give him the finger. That's what I wanted to have happen.
Well, you've got a troubled relationship with sincere emotion, so I understand that that's your
I'm
take.
Sorry. You know what? I also have a trouble with sort of buying into at the end of a comedy show for 30 seconds. You put up a moment of sincerity, and we're supposed to buy into it.
Well,
that's what I also have a trouble with, well, Mr. Hoity-toity. So, you know, before you judge me on my emotional capacity, maybe you should not judge me against my ability to enjoy an afterthought of, like, a little clip of, like, supposed to derive emotion after this show. I mean, give me a break.
All I know is that it hit me in a way I wasn't expecting, so I was
really
appreciative. Yeah.
As someone who has not seen an episode of Marin yet, are the I guess you can say the comparisons to Louis Fair?
It's hard to avoid. I mean, you know, it's not quite the same exact sort of absurdist mentality. It's very Marin. It's like literally this is an anecdote from his life that he's told. So it's, you know, I think it's very much
right.
of his character and of his tone. So maybe in the most loose sense that it's a sort of single camera comedy drama with a comedian. Yes, but I don't know. He's calling it, you know, not Louis. So
that's what he's calling your show?
Yeah. Like in one interview, he said, like, you can call it not Louis. But, you know, that's more about his troubled relationship with Louis than I think
right.
something about the show.
Right.
But I'm cautiously optimistic. I, you know, I would have liked a little bit more, like, laugh out loud funny from it at the start. But it won me over at the end.
And what did you think of the writing and the performances, just out of curiosity? Just curious.
You have to watch the YouTube of Sam saying that. It's the face he's making.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like people are growing into their roles. Some of the acting was a little, I thought, rushed. They could do with a little more pauses. Who? And
who's?
The cast, you know.
I have never heard film guy Matthew be so diplomatic and adroit right. as he's being right now. It's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Well, just because I won't jump on the anti-Marin bandwagon.
Wait, Hold on. What anti-Marin bandwagon is involved in this? I'm asking you to analyze this. You present yourself as a very, you know, pull-no-punches critic, high-minded, highfalutin, some people would say. I wouldn't say that.
I don't use the word falutin.
I wouldn't say that either. I don't use the word falutin.
Yeah.
Maybe Matthew's waiting for that episode he was promised in season
two
as well.
Yeah, I'm looking for season three at least, you know, to see what see what happens when the one guy that helps him out makes some videos
I'm
gets
just
on the
curious what your perspective was on it. And you are dancing around the questions. I mean, even Michael,
I'm giving a measured,
you know,
consideration.
So-called Marin agnostic is saying,
I am a Marin agnostic. I don't know anything about Marin. I would just say, though, as a Marin agnostic, this sounds pretty ominous the way the show is being described.
Well, look.
I'm not, like, jumping to go watch this now.
No,
the
I wouldn't.
A comedy show that you would like to be funny is
right.
basically what you're saying.
Yeah. Some of the beats were rushed. I'll put it that way. But you know what?
Be specific. I'm trying to remember what you're talking about.
I'm purely from a directorial point of view. Some of the
the director was bad. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I don't know who directed it. It's a guy who did some Academy Award winning short films. But there was
tough to sustain it over for 22 minutes.
That's
sometimes.
True. But was it a home run? No. But I think it was a solid, like, double.
All right. Now hold on for a second. We got somebody calling in, friend of the show,
Stand-up double.
You know, as a producer emeritus, you always get privileges. Who's on the phone?
Hey, this is Josh.
Yeah, all right, so it's Josh calling in on the producer emeritus hotline. Yeah, now, Matthew, you remember Josh, don't
you? Sure
I?
Do, yeah.
Okay, and everyone here. What's up, Josh?
Well, you know, I was watching, you know, this Marin discussion. I needed to chime in because I was listening to him on Howard Stern this week, and it's you know, he was all over Stern Network. So, you know, he came, he was in studio on Wednesday, and then they were doing ads for the IFC show, both wow. regular ads, and then they had Stern doing live reads for the
That's called,
for
the, you know what we call that?
In there too.
We call that pay to play.
One is that, you know, Stern does these live reads, and, you know, he never uses, you know, you can tell he doesn't use the product or whatever, and he hadn't seen the show. And he, so he's reading this sort of descriptive thing about Marin's show in this just so totally flat voice. He's like, Marc Maron is a neurotic comic who can't tolerate other people's success, and his show is hilarious. Premiering on IFC, and it's sort of without Marin's sort of neurotic voice behind it. It just sounded extremely boring. It was like a show about a guy who.
I did hear the Howard Stern interview with Marin, and I thought that was pretty good.
It was pretty good, although it was good. Although I thought it was also funny how much Marin has sort of, and I don't want to sort of hop on the trash Marin bandwagon. I just thought this was sort of funny how much he's gotten out of treating Jon Stewart poorly without any input from Jon Stewart whatsoever.
Like, well, first off, what's annoying is we broke that story on this show. We broke the Jon Stewart story on this show. The first time he ever copped to Jon Stewart not coming on was on this show.
Yeah, I remember.
And we get nothing out of it. It's classic.
I heard something recently at a Q&A before the Daily Show. He addressed that.
Oh, that Jon Stewart did?
Yeah, and he said the ball's in Marin's court.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's true. I think I may have read it on Reddit.
Yeah, you got to be careful about what you read on Reddit.
Exactly.
All I know is after listening to Marin on that Howard Stern thing, it's like, hopefully now that Sam Kinison story is so overexposed, I'll never have to hear it again. Because I've heard that thing like about 400 times.
Which one? The peeing in his bed story?
Yes.
Oh, everybody loves that story.
Is that it, Josh?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I think that, you know, Stewart probably deserves some sort of residuals just for the storytelling. He just, you know, Marin was saying, well, you know, I try to get him on the show and he won't come on the podcast, and he says he'll maybe get coffee with me, but, you know, he's gotten like three stories out of Jon Stewart never having actually interacted with him.
I don't want that to set a precedent, because that's basically what I'm doing with Marin.
what I'm thinking is that actually there could be a strategy here, is that you might actually gain some. I think you actually have to if you started treating Marin more poorly, it might actually translate to greater success for you.
Yes, I think that's what, you know, that's what I've been trying to explain to my audience, is that the longer Marin doesn't put me on the show, the better it is for me. Because now I got this thing like, what's going on with Marc Maron? Why is he afraid to have me on a show? Right?
I think that's the sort of thing that's to success.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to cultivate.
I think you should ban Marin from the Majority Report.
Well, I'm just going to keep claiming I invited him. He won't come on now.
I think you should just ban
him. Yeah, you'll have a TV gig in no time.
Right. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, and for that matter, I've invited Jon Stewart on. He won't come on.
What'd you do to him?
I just called him. I said, I'm the guy who doesn't apologize. And he won't come on. All right, Josh. We're going to get to a film selection. Talk to you soon.
You know, I remember how hard we worked to try to get you guys to mesh on Break Room Live, and that could have been something good, but I just think you guys are just too iconoclastic. You just, for some reason, you won't overlap, you won't work well together.
Well, that wasn't me, that was him.
Well, that's what he said too, so.
No, that's not true. He was the one who literally went to our executive producer to tell on me.
No, I know.
And I said, why are you doing that? And he goes,
telling you for what?
He was mad because I was taking all the good stories or something.
What?
Oh yeah, no. It was. I mean, I don't want to tell stories out of school, but it's true. No, he was. Anybody who watched that show could tell what was going on. Like every 2 weeks, we'd have to change the format because he would be like, "Sam's doing all the good stories. I'm just doing the stupid stories."
Right, but you know, once you knew that you were getting under his skin, you're that part of your personality took over.
Absolutely,
and
right.
He just kept
absolutely
needling
right.
And
I mean, there are shows you can watch, and literally, I'm talking, and I can hear him huffing and puffing, like going, because it was
like
my
zoom
turn. Because it
him.
Had to be, we couldn't talk back and forth. It had to be, we had to divvy up the stories, because that was the way he wanted to do it. That was the way it was going to make him more comfortable. And I could hear him, you know, he's standing like right, he's even closer than where Matthew is, and I could hear him go,
like this. And so what I would do is I would draw them out. And I would, like, you know, whatever it was that I sensed was bothering him, I would do more of it. Not in a way that the audience, because and people
in a way
this.
The audience could.
Well, people would IM me knowing that, like, yeah. Like I would get, like, I know there were people, and I'm not going to name names. Some of whom have been on this show, some of whom have been on his show, who were IMing me and IMing the show with an alias to torment Marin. And would email me after the fact.
This
and
is
go,
breaking news.
I can't help myself. And I go, I totally understand. I'm in the exact same position. Like people who.
You guys.
I can't. Look, Marin was, you know, the his own worst enemy at that time. And then he would make other enemies. And you know, in the end, it all worked out for him. So I'm happy.
But let's keep talking about Marc Maron.
Right. Well, I mean, look, this is not, it's not inappropriate. His show is launching.
That's true.
The guy is right now about as big as you can get in terms of media. I mean, he's been on.
It's nice of you to say as he'll ever get.
No, I said as one could get.
Yeah, right.
And it's also. It's
okay, yeah.
But he was on this week with Charlie Rose on CBS Morning.
Ooh, that had to
and
hurt.
Howard Stern. So, I mean, like, you've hit the, you know, what's next? I mean, The View, is that still on? Is The View even
yes,
exist?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so The View, but who's hosting The View these days?
It's still Whoopi Goldberg and...
not Joy Behar, right? Is she...
Joy Behar is still there for now. She's leaving
okay.
soon, I think.
All right, well, I'd be surprised. I mean, it's short of The View, which, you know, it's really, I don't think he belongs on. I mean, let's
short of his own hour with Charlie Rose.
Right. And that if that happens,
you're gonna,
I'll be
what
taking
gonna
a couple of week vacations.
Has Marin been on The Tonight Show yet?
Oh, yeah.
Jay Leno show?
I
no.
So.
I don't think so.
Who
I don't
cares?
Think so.
I mean, he doesn't care about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, who cares?
No, seriously, he'd be far. And these days, The Tonight Show, you'd rather be on Letterman.
Just trying to throw things out.
No, that doesn't. I mean, he's been everywhere. And so this is, you know, this. We would be talking about it if it was Louis. But Louis's also really, really talented.
Yes, Louis is very talented.
So
Marc Maron is pretty talented in his own way too.
Mark,
so.
Yes, I don't know why you had to qualify it that way. I would just say Marc
in his
is very
own
talented.
Way.
Is,
yeah,
that's a talent.
Well,
man.
Yeah, really.
That's
well, he doesn't. He doesn't proclaim to be a writer and director in the way that Louis does. Louis made a lot of films. Louis
right.
made film a particular point of you know
right.
examination right. for himself. So
no one has been a bigger fan over the years of Marc Maron than myself. You know, I think more or less that's the case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a big qualifier.
Wow.
So that's, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Wow.
True.
Can we hit the wow?
Hit that wow. Go ahead, Matthew. Wow.
You're not really, that's why it was a little bit low. You're not really qualified to hit that.
I touched it.
All right, Matthew, let's hear it. Let's
wow.
hear it. What is the, your film pick for the day?
All right. So my film
what
pick
is that
today?
That you have on your phone? What is that logo there? So like that's not like an intergalactic.
It's the crest of the United Federation of Planets.
Oh my God!
So in case anyone thinks I'm too highfalutin, my phone outs me as a huge Star Trek fan.
Gotta say, not a Star Trek fan.
Why do you gotta say that?
No, because Star Wars is better.
Wait a second.
We're not gonna do this. Let's get to a movie recommendation.
Yeah,
please.
Thank you, Michael.
Please,
thank you.
Please.
He's got the logo of the Federation on his phone.
What the hell is this but a tricorder and a communicator put together? I'm sorry. It just makes sense.
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
all right.
Let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, please.
Before Matt force chokes me over here. Okay, so I have two, actually, films today. One of them is a little bit slower, and I know you said you don't have a lot of time to pay attention to movies, and some other people have made reference to maybe the caliber of film that I recommend. So I want to recommend a movie that I don't know if maybe you saw. Did you ever see Let the Right One In?
Yes. Are you talking about the original? Or
the original.
The original, which by far destroys
it. I didn't see Let Me In, but Let the Right One In is an amazing movie. It's ostensibly a vampire tale, but it's done very kind of ambiently. It's got a lot of atmosphere. It's a really moving story.
What does that mean? It's got a lot of atmosphere.
Well, it's not like a slasher film.
It draws
okay.
you in. It creates
okay.
a whole setting okay. and scenery. You feel like
okay.
it's European. There are subtitles. So, yeah. Okay, so in lieu of... or
it's Swedish, right?
Yeah, it's Swedish. In expectation of that kind of... I have another one by the same director. His first English-language directorial film called Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is a film version of the novel, which was also done as a miniseries in the early 80s.
With Tinker Tailor's recent, right?
Yeah, recent.
Gary Oldman. That's a great movie.
Yeah, Gary Oldman. That's excellent. Yeah, Gary Oldman.
Saw
it. Oh, you saw it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Of course.
Why, of course? You don't see movies.
No, but that's the kind of movie I watch.
That's what I'm saying.
You're a little bit late.
Such a good
damn.
Movie.
So go see
that.
Right,
I'll say it again.
It just came out on Amazon streaming, so how did you watch it?
I must have watched it.
In a hotel or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, you know I know what? Sam. I know how he watches movies.
It wasn't not on Netflix? How did I watch
it? No, it wasn't on Netflix. I've wanted to recommend
maybe
it since I saw it on HBO.
Maybe I didn't see it in
was
movie
it one of those movies you used your SAC credentials for?
No.
It is on HBO right now.
Yeah, it's been on it for a while. It's got like every great British actor in it going right now.
I'm pretty sure I watched it. Where could I have watched it? Maybe in a hotel. That sounds like a hotel movie for me.
Yeah, because it hasn't been on streaming until very recently. So
okay.
So go see Let the Right One In.
All right.
Yeah,
I'll see
the Right One In.
I got three movies.
Thomas Albertson.
All right.
Don't let Milo walk by during Let the Right One In.
Oh, yeah, definitely don't.
Do you want to see a picture of Saul?
Yes.
Well, wait. Why don't we wait till the end of the show?
Okay. Well, you know, I have you've been somewhat interested in my life, my personal life in the past.
Oh my God! Yeah. OMG! Well, wait a second. This is like we've blown the fanfare, and out with the announcement.
Please.
And are you about to tell me what I think you're about to tell me?
I think I am.
Oh, boy.
I proposed to my girlfriend, Mary, and we're getting married.
Wow!
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I know the audience is...
Holy cow! My God. I am impressed that you asked. I'm shocked that she said yes.
Thank you.
And I am blown away that Matt had that music pulled up like that.
We did not arrange it.
Of all the things that are blowing me away right now, that's the part that really is amazing me. It's that my board ops actually came up with a song that was appropriate in the moment.
Come on, these guys are good, Sam. Come on, you know you like them.
That's amazing. So wait a second. So you asked her, and she said yes.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And I gave her a ring and everything, you know, the way you're supposed to.
Wow.
When's the date?
Now, wait a second. How did you ask?
It wasn't too extremely elaborate. We were in bed one night, and I hid the ring under her pillow.
Wait a second.
Oh, yeah.
Really? You got to get
We've
this
had
explicit?
Premarital sex. It's not.
Really?
I didn't wait for that, yeah.
Is her family aware of this?
Is her family aware that we've slept together?
Yeah.
You know, I assume that they just surmise, but we haven't discussed
right.
it with them.
All right. All right.
Do you talk about that with your family? I mean, you have two babies, so they must have put it together.
Well, no, but we waited until after we were married.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, yeah.
We wanted Nikki to be able to wear white at the wedding, but that's all right. It's, you know, color's a nice choice, too, for a wedding guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're lying in bed. We don't have to talk about what happened before.
Well, what I was wearing was...
Okay.
No.
And you hid the...
I hid it under her pillow, and she came in.
In the box?
Yeah, in the box. Okay. Yeah, nice. It was a box from the nice store where I got it. And I asked her, like, are you happy? And she said, yes, to her credit. And I said...
What if she had said, no?
Well, then I would have had an answer in that case, too.
Kept the pillow. Just kept
yeah,
the
yeah, could have stayed there. Right. Could have been like, never mind. But she said yes, and I said, well, do you think you could be happier? And before she could answer that one, I pulled it out and presented it to her, and everything was beautiful.
Wow, that's very
sweet.
It's
funny if you were like, could you be happier? And she was like, you know, you could really shave that beard.
Yeah. She's like, what are you?
Or she starts answering, you're like, hey, look, shut up.
Yeah.
Rhetorical question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're stepping on my act here, yeah. No, she played along.
That's very romantic, Matthew.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
I think I said to Nikki, hey, because I had the ring. I was on the beach, and I was afraid I was going to lose it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had the ring in a... And I didn't want it to jiggle around, so I had the ring in a video cassette box. Because I had just come back from editing from pilot
season. That's how long ago this was.
And it was like a mini DV. And I said,
oh,
you got to check out this footage of the Patriots winning the Super Bowl.
Play the music, man. Play the music.
And, so I was a little bit less romantic in the way.
But that's so Sam. It's awesome.
But it was, we were on, with that said, we were looking at the sunset of the Pacific on the Pacific beach. It wasn't, just in our bedroom.
Yeah. No, one thing I love about you is your pet name for Nikki is Dude. So right. That goes right in with that.
Right.
I think that's cute.
Dude, check out this footage from the Patriots Super Bowl.
Hey, dude, you complete me in who I am.
I love it, Sam. I love
it. All right. Well, Matthew, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very happy
to hear
that.
Thank you for letting me stop the show to talk about
it. Finally, finally.
Yeah.
We've made an honest man out of you.
Thank you.
Your folks and I were very concerned.
We
wouldn't be able to marry you off. And now we've been able to.
You're my second Jewish mother. You really
there you
are.
Go. Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm blown away. Somebody told me on Fresh Air, Maron said that he was trying to have a baby, which also
Who?
I found shocking.
Who?
Maron?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Mark Maron.
All right, Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. Please hang around. Don't say anything, but hang around and enjoy the rest of the show. I want to take some IMs and...
You're still up.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we don't
have... So it's actually completely up to you to be silent.
Of course, you're not going to have the same sort of video.
Should I fix the camera to
no.
take him out of the shot?
No, I don't think so. That's an interesting
Feel
shot.
Feel free to play with the sound. Play with the
don't play with the
sounds over there.
All right. Let's take some IMs here. Let's see. I hope there's nothing mean about... Matthew
Film Guy?
Yeah.
I'm sure there is.
That would not be nice. I was going to talk about Howie Kurtz, but who gives a shit about him, honestly? Boring. Loki 4191. Hey, Sam, next time a libertarian calls in, you can ask them the best freedom response for me to the Exide battery recycling plant shut down for leaking hazardous materials. It's maybe less mile, 2 miles from where I work. Maybe I can exercise freedom and quit my job or boycott their car batteries. And set up a special Exide battery cancer fund in case I get sick. Bingo Mosquito. I must be too young to understand, but whenever I hear Rothschilds, I think of the delicious, delicious candy. Rothschilds were a big Jewish banking family that I don't know if they were considered the bankers to, I think, several queens and kings. Over the years, and then sort of they became the bankers for the Illuminati, as the story goes. A Square, Sam, too good to see you on Viewpoint. For my money, Mullins was the get of the week. Sure, he'll be on MSNBC soon, but heard on MR first. My husband, proud to have made a Cedarista-level contribution to change his status from super moocher to supporter, so we can give Oz another show far. Indeed, of course, we'll do. Thank you. Carton Dangerous. Oh, God. I didn't see that. I was a camp counselor one summer in Texas. While there, I had to leave a few groups around daily activities, one of them including shooting .22 caliber rifles at a range. I went to camp in Maine. And when I was 9, we would go to the range and we would shoot .22s. I got no problem with that. But you should not be able... Well, maybe 9, to actually take the gun away from that stall that you're in, you know. But you should not be able to do it without direct one-on-one supervision. And the gun should be at the range. You want to teach the kids about gun shooting guns, you leave it at the range. You never, ever, ever allow access. And look, if it's part of your culture, that's the problem. That's the problem.
You all right, Sam?
I've been sick, folks.
Matthew, yeah. Film Guy's going to have to start reading those IMs
soon. Hold on.
Do you want some wild cherry park syrup?
So how you doing, Matthew?
I'm doing good. How are you, man?
Want to talk Maron?
Yeah. Let's for change, let's bring him up.
Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song?
Oh, we do have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Play it! Play it!
Quick!
If weed was legal, what would it be like? If weed was legal, what would it be like? Just go to Washington or Colorado and you'll find out. So, if you want to know what it's like,
is pretty plain to see. Washington and Colorado are mighty fine places to be. Just open your mind, turn off the radio, or at least turn off the TV. Just go to Washington or Colorado and you'll find out. If weed was legal, what would it be like? If weed was legal, what would it be like? Thank you, Washington and Colorado. I love you. Yeah, if anyone from Texas to Maine still asking what it's like, don't watch TV, don't listen to the lies, just jump on your motorbike, or get on the bus, get on a train, take yourself a real long hike. Just go to Washington or Colorado and you'll find out.
Fresh from the Washington Tourism Board.
There you go.
I like how Jimmy, all the way in Maine, throws in that Colorado or Washington. It just being a long hike for him.
Kudos to Reefer Cake.
That was a good song.
It's a good song and a good point. We're actually going to be able to see what it is like to legalize marijuana, assuming that the Obama Department of Justice does not interfere, essentially, and allows for these states to have some measure of independence on this matter. And I'll also say, good for Jimmy Reefer Cake for saying don't turn off your radio. He went there and then he backed off it and he said just turn off your TV. So
he should have thrown in, though, tune your radios to majority.fm.
It would be nice. It would be nice, but that's still pretty good.
This guy wrote on the YouTube the other day, now someone besides Jimmy Reefer Cake, obviously, he said, great Majority Report. I love to wake and bake to the majority. So there you go, Jimmy.
There you go. All right.
Well, thank you, Michael.
quite the recommendation.
All right. Carton Dangerous. The shooting range, 22 caliber rifles at a range. I have never sweat more in my life than having to take those kids to that range. If I had reprimanded them earlier in the day, there was literally nothing from stopping any of the kids from turning their rifle on me. Luckily, our boys were well adjusted, but I didn't know that at the time. I had never met these children in my life. Nothing against Texas. I'm from Mississippi, Alabama myself. The camp just happened to be in Texas. 1001. Normally, I agree with Matthew Film Guy, but Drive was incredibly stupid. Can't believe it's just a film with such a thin, one-dimensional plot. Now, I know what Matthew's going to say, and I'm going to write it down on a piece of paper before you say it, Matthew.
The Great Karnak Returns.
Hold on 1 second.
What movie are we talking about?
Drive.
Again? Drive.
I know it got a lot of heat.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very good movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Matthew. Answer. Answer that person.
I tend to agree. I understand what he's saying, but it was still an affecting kind of exploitation come art movie for me. So I don't totally disagree with his take. I just happen to have enjoyed it that way. I don't think it's super deep, and I'm trying to avoid the super deep movies on this program. Just to...
Okay, that's what I knew. Yeah. I had to because of Sam. Yeah. All right, there it is. There it is. I knew what he was going to say. Had to because it's Sam.
That's actually what Sam wrote down.
Well, Sam,
for you listening.
Yeah.
You want every movie to be Ronin. I try to think of every movie like Ronin.
Well, Ronin wasn't as good as Ronin should have been, but it was pretty good.
But I know what you mean. Car chases and kind of
that's
a gripping.
A De Niro movie.
Yeah, but good car chases.
That was
what's his face? Who did that? Frankenheimer?
Was it?
Yeah. You know, he had the whole thing where he would mount the car with the camera down at the bumper of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his – he did that in, what do you call it, French Connection, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sam's seen some movies.
Oh, yeah. Kyle, this interview has made it clear that Matthew Film Guy is just another bullshitter. Can't trust this guy's opinions on film after watching him attempt so many punches and put them back in his pocket.
What does that mean, Shanks?
It means you're pulling your punches. About Marin. That's what he's saying.
You don't think that I have a legitimate point about it being, you know, promising? If not, you want me to either harshly condemn it in a sort of pundit form or praise it to high heavens? I have a a pretty positive, but not completely you know, gung-ho attitude towards it.
All right.
That's legitimate, I think.
Yeah, you're really dancing around that. 767654. I've just figured it out. Marin is jealous Sarah Silverman never went out with him. It's probably why he and Colin Quinn don't talk. Is that true? They don't talk?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
I don't know that either.
Colin Quinn?
Who's Colin Quinn?
I was messing with you.
Oh, boy. Max. It's possible that Michael would not know who Colin Quinn is, though.
Bob Flay.
Very funny.
Marin will be on Real Time tonight with Bill Maher.
He will?
There you go. Again, he's on that show. Nathan Flowers. Star Wars is better, Matt. Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Jar Jar Binks. Jabba the Hutt. The fat turd on the dais.
Whoa. Jabba the Hutt. Attacking Jabba the Hutt.
That's better than exploring the nature of humanity through the lens of the Federation.
Are you being serious here? All right, I'll give you Jar Jar Binks.
Look,
but
Star
Jabba
Wars
the Hutt is
for...
a great character. And you know what? Attack of the Clones, say what you will about it, but A, it brought us Jango Fett. And B, it gave us that kick-ass...
You know what?
It gave us that kick-ass scene.
How do
where
I
we
mute
saw,
your microphone?
Where we saw Yoda no. go crazy in that fight scene.
No. Okay. All right.
Nathan, don't.
Agnes
need to shoot
O'Liberalis. What makes, quote, an honest man out of him actually mean? Well, I just, you know, I don't want Matthew to give away his treasure to a woman without getting something in return, i.e., a wedding ring. That's all I'm saying. I don't want him to give away what's the most important aspect of Matthew. That being his sexual organs and access to them, to a woman
Sam, I had
before
no idea.
Before she ponies up and says that she's going to support you financially in the future. That's all.
That's right.
That's what I mean by making an honest man out of it.
Oh.
You don't give it away for free.
That's right. Thank you, Sam, for protecting my chastity.
Hope Feld. Well, I'm not protecting your chastity. I'm just protecting your leverage.
Oh, I see. Transactional. I
right.
Get it. Yeah.
Hope Feld, today's low tax rate on corporation CEO on stock option income, 20%, encourages using shareholder money for himself. Yes. Yes. Bill Lozanik, we interviewed him about this sometime. In the 1950s, the tax rate was 90%, no stock options. This all changed in the 80s. You're absolutely right, Hope Feld. CEO Harold Jenin stole the corporation's free cash flow. Jenin used it to expand his empire by expanding the company and hiring more workers. At the higher marginal tax rate and 100% business expense deduction for workers' wages, the effective cost of workers as input drops. This encourages more hiring because the relative impact of no marginal cost projects drop relative to the projects. Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. You said that much better than I could, and I'm going to save that. In some fashion, so that I can. All right, let's go to iJohnny. Hey Sam, great episode. Began with the show kicking ass with Cliff, and then finish it up on a lighter side with Matthew Film Guy, with plenty of Marin mocking spread throughout. Today I feel like I've been indulged to a full course meal in podcasting. Have a great weekend, guys. Glad we could help. L.R. Porter, labor action at one terminal at Port of Seattle shut down work for the day shift there. In protest of employer changing benefits administrator, which has not been paying medical claims, resulting in pensioners and widows getting collection notices for covered services not paid for. I just love the longshoremen. They kick ass. Bush and Chains, how do you know you're working too hard? You find out late in the program that it's actually Friday.
Oh, that's how you spell Bush and Chains.
Bartleby.
With a Z, yes.
Congrats, Matthew. An excellent choice. Let the Right One In. It is one of the most compelling and memorable films I've seen in a long time. To get back to Marin, though, curious to know if Matthew Film Guy had a reaction to Marin's dust-up with James Franco.
I actually felt bad for Mark. I was actually very interested in what he was saying and asking Harmony Korine before Eddie Pepitone busted in, which was funny. But I thought he was asking good questions, things I'd want to know from Harmony Korine, whose films I like. And, you know, Franco just didn't maybe understand the vibe of Marin's podcast. So, you know, it was just two energies that didn't mesh. And I kind of felt more sympathy for Mark than for Franco.
Yeah, poor Mark. He only got reams of free press from
me. Well, no, I didn't feel bad for him on that level. But, you know, he certainly felt bad about it.
Two Matthew-era Cedar Marin items. The Marin-Matthew chemistry was actually great. Hope they reprise it sometime. That's one.
2, Break Room Live, at the absolute low point of Cedar Marin tension, the suicide-era Marin came this close to putting his manhood on the break room table. He was sincere. I remember that. He was sincerely, angrily challenging Sam in the one non-politics area he felt straight up beat him. Given the recent Margaret Cho discussion of Marin's battering ram, quote-unquote, see last live WTF, probably good Mark soon started a podcast instead.
Well, you guys did strip down to your skivvies and have a weight off.
Yeah, we did have a lose weight competition. That was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah,
I still am like have kept, you know, maybe 8 or 9 pounds of that 17 off.
So maybe, you know, Marin is kind of like your bete noir. You need to lean against
him. I asked him if he wanted to do it again.
But just in all things, podcasts.
No, really, just the weight.
Just the weight, yeah.
I mean, if he would do it, like we could shoot it, you know, he would shoot it. I would do it in a minute. I mean, it was the only way I could lose weight. I mean, I've never lost that much weight in my entire life.
Wow.
And, you know, I've gone on diets and my weight has fluctuated, back.
Right.
Yeah, now it's okay. But, I lost 17 pounds in a month.
Jesus, that's scary.
Strictly on cutting. No, it was perfectly healthy. Right. I ate very healthily.
Right.
I just cut my caloric intake down to 1,600-1,700 calories a day. And for someone like me, that's
Hunger strike.
It's not a lot of weight so I would love to do it again. Clower, Ronan, yeah, man, I knew there had to be someone else who liked that film. Sagida, to honor the most secretive publicly funded agency or person in the US, the Golden Padlock, acknowledges the dedication of government officials working to keep vital information hidden from the public. I'll check that out. Kyle, I prefer Spaceballs. Pizza the Hut was a classic character joke. 7676, the prequels and special editions do not count.
Oh, they don't count.
Nathan Flowers, get James Franco on the show. Stick it to Marin and get free press for the show. But he'd do it to stick it to Marin. You can talk about his film, Kink. You know what? Maybe we'll do that. I could probably get him on. I know Stephen Elliott is doing a film that Frank – that would be fun.
It would be great if you had that interview with him and you guys hit it off so good. And then at the end of the interview, James Franco was just like, thank you for your time, Sam. This is one of the best interviews I've ever done.
Yeah, I don't know if I could get James Franco to talk that way. And I also – I get the sense that Franco may not appreciate – What we're doing with this.
You know,
like,
honestly,
I have a feeling he would probably say, like, that's not cool.
Right.
Why would you make fun of Mark that way?
Yeah. He's not on the...
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know James Franco, you know, other than what he's done, you know, his work, of course, in Spider-Man and the thing where he bit off his arm.
Freaks and Geeks.
The one where he was the guy who got stuck.
Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, I thought you were saying
he bit off his arm in Freaks and Geeks.
Was not a Freaks and Geeks guy. No. I have a feeling he just wouldn't get it. But the final I am of the day, folks.
James Franco was in Freaks and Geeks.
I didn't watch.
He didn't watch it.
Oh.
Wicking 1985. Sam, when are you going to be on Real Time? That's a question that I've often asked myself, and the answer is I don't know. Matthew, film guy, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure, Sam. Anytime.
Everyone, thank you for joining us this week. I think on Monday we may have a members-only show so I can attempt to really get over my cold here again. Matt and Michael have been working double duty. They could use probably a day off. So it'll be a members-only show, and it probably will be just Matt and Michael, what they recorded for you guys, which I think you'll enjoy. All right, folks, until then, I bid you adieu.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice was made for the another option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the man's not gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. And I shifted into you while I shifted in and out of you. For my moment to happen, I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lines got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Pilot light shining bright.